How do you explain tism? I've tried and failed many times. Because there are bands who do funny songs. There are bands who dress up and hide who they are. There are bands who use music as anarchy to make points about the way we live. But tism did all that and more. Plus, they turned all those things up to 11. It feels wrong to explain tism in an episode like this. Tism wasn't built to exist to have their story told in your regular timeline of a band. Because these band episodes are often the same. Some people meet, they make music, they have a hit, they hang in there for a bit longer, they break up. But tism weren't like other bands, and their mystery shouldn't be demystified. But there is a story to tell, a history of what they achieved and what they stood for, and all the people they offended along the way, and of course, how they fit into this whole 90s scene. They are a band, sure, but their music only tells part of the story. So let's try and explain it. Welcome to Just Ace, a podcast about the 90s Australian alternative music scene, whatever the hell that means. In this episode, we look at tism. I have a bit of a cough, so I apologise in advance. So here's the boring bit about how it all began. Tism is an acronym for This Is Serious Mum. It was the name given to the music project started in 1982 by a bunch of Melbourne friends and musicians. They included drummer Damien Cowell and guitarist Eugene Sester of the punk band I Can Run. They were quickly joined by Peter Minnack, Sean Kelly and Jack Holt. The name This Is Serious Mum doesn't seem to have any real origins. When asked, the band simply says they chose the name because Nick Barker and the Reptiles was taken. It's hard to get straight answers out of them at the best of times. The inspiration for tism was anti-inspiration. They hated the pretentiousness of the Melbourne post-punk scene. They were bored with the way that things were. Their instinct was to kick against authority, however authority showed itself. They existed to react against the existence of other things. Musically, the members of This Is Serious Mum had played in more traditional bands, but this new band would be different for many reasons. One was a drum machine, which was pretty in vogue in the mid-80s, but it set them apart from the guitars of post-punk. And then in an attempt to not write about the same old pretentious vague yearnings of post-punk, the band wrote about things that made them laugh or things they wanted to skewer. They mainly made bedroom recordings, essentially demos for themselves and friends. But they wanted to play, and having spent a year mucking around with demos, they did their first show in 1983. They didn't use the acronym TISM yet, but they did wear costumes. They were Ku Klux Klan-style outfits made from newspapers. The gig was called the Get Fucked Concert, and it was promoted as a one-off. The band would break up after that show. And maybe that could have been it for this silly project, but I guess there was more skewering to be done.
Of course, here we are at this very well-appointed athletics reserve, and there is the Duncan MacKinnon Hall.
Duncan MacKinnon.
Which was the home of Tism's very first gig, which I do recall was quite an abject failure.
Mm. It was, of course, our first and last gig too, Humphrey. Every gig since then has been a reunion gig. I think the fans who...
They did more home recording and then the odd gig, and by 1985, they had emerged closer to the Tism that we know. They started wearing black balaclavas and all-black outfits. In later years, those masks became more colourful and cartoonish, but you have to remember how aggressive and threatening those masks and outfits looked when they first started. They also adopted new names. By now they had names like Ron Hitler Barassi or Humphrey B. Flaubert. The names were usually a mix of highbrow and lowbrow. Eugene Dealer Hot Cross Bun was another. Importantly, they hid who they really were, which was easier to do in the 80s and 90s. Along with the masks, and with no other reference point, and no Wikipedia, they kept their identities a secret. I'm not sure you can get away with that these days. The anonymity also allowed the band to keep their day jobs, and still be as offensive as they want. It helped that their music was never introspective or about themselves. They started doing the synchronized dancing too, and having several people on stage who were dressed as Tism members who did nothing but dance. There could be dozens of people on stage and it was hard to keep track. There was a core band, but if the bass player was sick and someone filled in, we'd never know, and it's not the point. Tism was a collective, not any particular guys. They released their first single in 1986. It was called Defecate on My Face. That's the title of the song that announced them to the world. It was released on Elvis Records, a small indie label in Melbourne. It is a song sung from the point of view of Hitler. Some scholars have speculated that maybe he had sexual fetishes. Autism took that speculation and ran with it, suggesting that his girlfriend Eva Braun defecated on his face on a regular basis. Why not? Here's Defecate on My Face by Tism. Packaging of their recorded music was important and every aspect of it revealed their subversiveness. This is the thing about Tism. Every minor detail had to be a Tismism. Oh yeah, remember that time I made up the awesome term Tismism? Defecate on My Face was a 7-inch single, but housed in a 12-inch sleeve. All four sides were sealed, so you can't actually get into the single. The artwork had This Is Serious Mum written along all four edges and four arrows saying This Way Is Up, all pointing in four different directions. The word Tism is also written in four different angles, and when you look at it from afar, it kind of looks like a swastika. Inside, if you get in, both sides of the label were the same, so good luck knowing what you're playing. The single cover also features little prose pieces that revealed the band members' new names. Thing is, Defecate on My Face is kind of fun. Live, they really thump the bass and the big chorus is a sing-along for fans. The original recording is kind of cheap sounding, but the musical ideas were good, if you like songs about Hitler being shat on. This is how Tism's recording history starts, and it just gets weirder from here. The thing I always struggle to explain to people about Tism is how all-encompassing their whole act is. Look, there are other touch points, like The Residents, the American band who wore large eyeballs on their head and largely remained anonymous. They were prolific and great and very important, but they were kind of a high art collective. They weren't weird pranksters. They weren't funny. They kind of aspired to be something very different. And then there's pranksters like the UK band KLF. Again, they were a bit more high-minded and arty. It meant that one of the paths to success in the early 90s, international support slots, weren't open to Tism. It's easy to get Tumbleweed to support Nirvana. That makes sense. But who would Tism support? There wasn't an international scene that they could tap into. Tism had their own mission. The argument at the heart of Tism's work is the pretentiousness of the highbrow and the anti-intellectualism of the lowbrow and the stereotypes around both. It's a very Australian conversation, especially in the 80s with that Australian larrikinism, good old boy football hooligan nonsense that was everywhere. But the overly intellectual side wasn't much better. The indie rock scene was full of pretensions. Tism's first album was released in 1988. The title was a great Tismism, a clash of high and low. It was a double album called Great Trucking Songs of the Renaissance. The first album had 12 tracks and featured new Tism songs. They had titles like 40 Years Then Death, or If Your Creative Gets Stuffed, and Saturday Night Palsy. The second album was something different. It featured several spoken word pieces, some of them recorded live. This was an important part of the Tism experience. These spoken pieces were intercut with short experimental musical interludes and the odd weird song. It was like a Tism mixtape or a hip-hop album with sketches and jokes. These speeches would lay out Tism's worldview in the most direct way. Great Truckin' Songs of the Renaissance is weird, and it is certainly a strong flavour. And if you found this flavour delicious, then you found your band. Crazily enough, it snuck into the ARIA Top 50 albums at number 48.
There's violence on the television, and letter bombs in the mail. But things can't be all that bad, 'cause Darren Hinch went to jail.
Tism in those early years were a Melbourne affair. They were regulars at the Punters Club where they played, and it wasn't often, so it was always an event. Many years later, when that bar closed down, Tism played one of the final shows. They were a fun local night out. They were big on the community radio scene in Melbourne as well. When they did do shows, or interviews, or releases, the Tismisms were all-encompassing. This included being in character for interviews. There's lots of myths and legends at this point. They would do things like only do an interview where you had to stand meters apart and only communicate with cans and string. They would surprise DJs at the community radio station Triple R, and one time they threw juice at Molly Meldrum. Who knows, maybe some of that was true, but they always kept the masks on and never revealed who they were. One memorable gig was opening a huge Virgin Megastore in Melbourne in 1989. Someone booked Tism to play, and when they took the stage, they unfurled signs for the great independent record store Gaslight and threw flyers for Gaslight into the crowd. Somehow Tism ended up on Australia's biggest TV show in 1989, Hey Hey It's Saturday. How the producers didn't check what this band was about, I don't know. I guess they just wanted to book a band, and this was a new Australian band that was getting some traction. It was also filmed in Melbourne, so it was probably just easy and someone probably knew someone. Importantly, no one really knew what Tism was yet. The story goes, the band didn't really like the show, and so they insulted the host Daryl Summers as soon as they met him. They had some leftover Tism costumes from another gig, so without telling anyone, they had 20 extra Tism members ready to invade their performances. The band wore costumes with big signs on their heads with the names John, Paul, George and Ringo. But after a verse, to the surprise of the TV show crew, 20 people invaded the stage and started to dance. Producers were screaming off air and they were told that they would never play on TV again. The song they performed that night was called Saturday Night Palsy. Here's the studio version of Saturday Night Palsy, taken from the great truckin' songs of the Renaissance. Well, I don't want to live and I don't want to die. I want to shove a red hot poker through the eye. Well, I want it to shine and I want it to rain. I want to get hit by a freight train. I'll be by full of a lump and palsy. I think I got Saturday Night Palsy, that's what I said. In 1990, the major labels came calling. This was pre-Nirvana, pre-alternative. There wasn't a smart move to sign a band that could work on Triple J. Basically, they were adored in Melbourne, and maybe the rest of Australia might catch on if someone gave them a push. There was interest from a couple of major labels, but Tism ended up on Phonogram, part of Polydor. I have no idea what either side was thinking. Why did a major label think this Tism would have hits? And why did Tism want to have anyone to report to? Well, at least Tism didn't compromise. Hot Dogma was still weird and wonderful. Although it wasn't as well received as their previous work, the album cover looked like a Chinese communist painting with crowds of workers holding up a Tism flag. All the writing on the back was in Chinese. From the album Hot Dogma, here's The History of Western Civilization. You can build an abattoir on Anzac Cove. You can invade Poland, scream death to the foe. You can cut the yoles and lay it down by thirds. Just don't come from the western suburbs. You go to the disco, the bouncer's a beast. You go on in, he says to the boys from the east. You gotta stay outside with the common herd. Just don't come from a western suburb. Come from the western suburbs. Hot Dogma didn't do as well as their debut. It was once again full of Tism weirdness, and none of the singles got away. And it wasn't like the major label put tons of money into the record anyway. Tism in recent years have reissued all their albums on vinyl and deluxe box sets. They have released demos and live albums, but they haven't touched Hot Dogma. I assume some of the rights might still reside with Phonogram. After the relative failure of Hot Dogma, they also lost a guitar player and a manager. So Tism regrouped. They weren't really a full-time band anyway, so they could take their time with no pressure of a label. They released two EPs before their next album proper. They were important in helping the band find their feet. They were both released by the indie distributor, Shock Records. The first was in 1992 and was called The Beasts of Suburban. It was again distributed by Shock, and this time they worked with producer Tony Cohen, who had worked with Nick Cave and Beasts of Suburban, and whose namesake is skewered on the EP name. Cohen would go on to produce amazing albums for Dave Graney and The Cruel Sea, but for now he was working with Tism. So, a new record deal and a proper producer. A tongue-in-cheek EP with a title aimed squarely at the indie rock fans who are going to love them no matter what. No major label pressure. This was going to be what TISM was about, right? That fun, jokey band from the indie scene that indie rockers loved. Well, you're wrong, because the second EP was called, of all things, Australia, the Lucky... It's a play on the popular but utterly meaningless phrase about Australia being the lucky country. And if the title wasn't offensive enough, then there was the EP cover. Australian artist Ken Doane was everywhere in the 80s and 90s. He had a bright cartoonish style that often showcased Australiana. His work was found on placemats and pillowcases, as well as art galleries. So for an EP called Australia the Lucky, the cover featured the head of a koala in the Ken Doane style, but with a syringe in his mouth. The band's name was written in a cartoonish script, much like Ken Doane's own signature. Ken Doane's people threatened to sue, naturally, so the band trashed copies of the EP. Existing copies are highly collectible. The EP was re-released with a new cover and a new name, censored due to legal advice. The new cover featured screenshots of fiery singer Sinead O'Connor on Saturday Night Live. In that appearance, just a year before the release of this EP, O'Connor appeared on the Live US show and accused the Catholic Church of child abuse and tore up a photo of the Pope and threw the pieces to the ground. She was widely derided, but of course, a few years later, the church would admit to lots of systemic child abuse. But for TISM, their EP cover featured O'Connor ripping a page with TISM's name on it instead of the Pope. The EP didn't really threaten the charts, possibly because a lot of people didn't stock it, but it kept the band going. Musically, the EP again involved Tony Cohen, but by now they had become disillusioned with hard rock and guitars. TISM started work on a third album. They had sessions with Tony Cohen again, but they didn't work out. They worked with Paul McKercher, who worked with bands like Tumbleweed and The Clouds. Two tracks from those sessions made the finished album. One was Young Talent Time, a play on Carl Jung and the TV show Young Talent Time that was on Australian TV. It was released as a single in early 1995, but it didn't chart and there's no film clip. Now, again, it's hard to talk about TISM in conventional terms. In the rock and roll biopic of TISM, this now is the moment of triumph. This was their first album after the failure of Hot Dogma, where they had their biggest setback so far. And now they had decided to get rid of all outside producers and follow their own purer and untainted vision. The album would be the biggest success of their career, vindicating everything the band stood for. It would be called Machiavelli and the Four Seasons. The opening track of the album was serviced to radio. It was called He'll Never Be an Old Man River. The title is a play on Old Man River, a song from the musical Showboat that has become a bit of a standard. But that's just another gag. That's not the river that TISM was talking about in the song. The river in question was River Phoenix, the talented actor who died of a drug overdose. Here's He'll Never Be an Old Man River by TISM.
I'm on the drug, I'm on the drug, I'm on the drug that killed River Phoenix. I'm on the drug, I'm on the drug, I'm on the drug that killed River Phoenix.
Veins, I'm soaked in moon, was not the same. Heroes explored to give us hope. River pushed back the envelope.
Drank the slab, drank the slab, drank the slab. The boss got drunk. Drank the slab, drank the slab, drank the slab. The boss got drunk.
The band has said the song is not about River Phoenix, but let's face it, it's pretty close to the bone. The original single cover was a mock-up of a gravestone with River Phoenix's name and the years he lived. That cover was ultimately withdrawn, and the new cover that featured a pile of pills was put out instead. In possibly their only act of conceding anything to the public, the cover featured the song name, but also the words, "I'm on the drugs that killed River Phoenix," across the top. They just wanted to make sure that you knew that this was the song that you heard on the radio. The famous story about this song goes that the Californian funk rock band the Red Hot Chili Peppers threatened to kill TISM after they heard it. It was said, apparently, in a radio interview sometime in 1996 on Triple J. Flea, the bass player, was good friends with River and was actually performing at the Viper Room when his friend died outside. There was no actual physical fight between the two bands that I know of, and I don't think they ever confronted each other. And the controversy didn't stop the song's rise. If anything, it probably helped it. How the hell did this song become a hit? Well, let's face it, the song is unforgettable. It's immediately catchy. The lyric is like nothing else. The Triple J young audience didn't find it offensive. It was just silly. I remember this song being all over the radio, and I had no idea about the context. It was just a catchy song that was a bit naughty. And it sounded great. It was different from moody three-piece guitar rock. I guess it's ironic that a song about being famous is what made Tism famous. He'll Never Be an Old Man River charted at number 23 in the Australian Singles Chart. It made it to number 9 in the Hottest 100 of 1995. It was the highest charting of three songs from Machiavelli and the Four Seasons to make that year's list. At number 10 was another single, Greg the Stop Sign. Here's Tism with Greg the Stop Sign.
The guy who slagged the football team, those jobs are not for him. He turns into a real estate agent who believes in discipline. The guy who's first to use cocaine, the wild boy breaking free, he'll end up in a court of law as a prosecuting QC. Remember the school captain? Success was a matter of time. I can hear her now as she screams, Greg, you missed the stop sign. Forget Snoop Doggy Dog, forget Old Ice-T. The true word out on the streets is produced by the DAC. What's the use of striving? Life's road in front unravels. We get to do the driving, don't choose the direction we travel.
Stop sign, Greg the stop sign, Greg the stop sign, Greg the stop sign.
Sometime in the next 10
years, Machiavelli and the Four Seasons managed to break into the album charts as well. And the album didn't even feature the band on the cover. The title made fun of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, the group that was the subject of the Jersey Boys musical. But on the Tism album, the cover showed another, more obscure band from the era called the Hollywood Argyles. The back of the album only listed love songs like I Love You Baby, It's You I Love Baby, and In Love With You Baby. Although a removable sticker on the cover told you it was a Tism album and that it featured that River Phoenix song. On the back of all this success, a lot of people discovered Tism for the first time. Like me, who like everyone else, was fascinated by the band. How many of them were they? Why do they wear balaclavas? What's it all about? If you can handle the offense, the songs were pretty good. Yes, they were repetitive and often based on one joke, but they sounded huge. The hooks were big and they were fun to dance to. They sounded good on the radio and they were perfect for a festival stage. Tism just seemed to be around after that. Machiavelli and the Four Seasons was a Triple J album of the week and they played all the singles. They hosted Rage, but all the songs they chose were kids' music or theme songs from other ABC shows. If you came across them on TV, you'd never forget that band in the balaclavas. And they were talking intellectually about the music industry or fame or footy in between swearing. During this period, a new box set was released that collected their early works for a new audience. They also recorded a new song called Shut Up, The Footy's on the Radio, which became the theme song of Triple M's AFL coverage. And they toured hard. Having previously only played in selected cities, they did every city on the 1996 Big Day Out. They wore big red shiny suits and with big inflatable bits on their back. They toured New Zealand and they played the UK for their one and only time. And this was a time where they started playing around with their black balaclava image and they would become more cartoonish. Their whole look with the masks made you lean in and pay attention. What was this crazy band up to now? Live, Tism would hold up cardboard signs with the song names and other messages like all AFL players are gay, or perform with jumping castles. But that's assuming they were Tism members at all. Often, Tism would feature those dancers in those identical outfits and you couldn't keep track of the numbers. But this is where the fun part starts, where people started to speculate who was in Tism. Were they another band? Was it secretly Beasts of Bourbon? Were they celebrities, which is why they had to hide themselves? Tism won the ARIA Award for Best Independent Release in 1995. They didn't accept the award themselves, but instead sent up Les Murray, SBS sports presenter and the subject of a song on their latest album. Les gets up and does a short thank you and then says something in his native Hungarian. It translates to, "When the revolution comes, the music industry will be the first to go. Thank you very much."
This is serious, okay. In the immortal words of the great Hungarian centre forward, Nándor Hidegkuti, please, do you mind? Amikor eljön a forradalom, a zeneipar lesz az első, amely menni fog. Köszönöm szépen, thank you very much.
So how would TISM follow up their breakthrough album? Nearly famous, they had the public's ear. They worked on a new album with hot producer Magoo, who made Regurgitator's recent smash hit album, Unit. Everyone was ready to support Australia's new favourite band. In the lead up to the release of the follow-up album, they put out a song called I Might Be A But I'm Not A Fucking If that wasn't already offensive enough, the music video was an explicit imitation of the Pamela and Tommy Lee sex tape that gets more perverted as it goes along. At some point, a member of TISM sits on the bed while the couple are having sex next to him and he reads a book. The song was banned almost everywhere. I have to believe that that was the point. But the controversy wasn't a huge deal in the end. People kind of just ignored the song rather than get outraged. Bruce Ruxton, head of the RSLs, wrote a letter to complain, but that's exactly the kind of thing that that moralistic old man would do anyway. The song wasn't a hit, which is a shame, because apart from a couple of words, the song is a corker. Here's I Might Be A But I'm Not A Fucking by TISM.
I might be a rockstar, but I'll never be a critic. I might like porno, but Baywatch is fucking sick. I might have screwed your sister, but I'll never screw your mum. I might have gone to uni, but at least I know I'm done. I might hide my small penis, but at least not by owning a gun. I might not be homosexual, but I've slept with a guy who's won. I'm not a
The album that followed would be called www.tism.wanker.com. The name seems a bit silly these days, but I guess it was a play on the internet culture of the times. The cover featured a big close-up of a member of TISM in a balaclava, but it really could have been anyone. But at least for the first time, it was clearly, clearly a TISM album. The follow-up single was probably the most radio-friendly of the album. It also put TISM's highbrow-lowbrow dichotomy front and centre. This is TISMism in a song. It was called What Are Ya? Here's What Are Ya by TISM.
You're a yob or you're a wanker. Take your fucking choice. So who is your favorite genius? James Hurd or James Joyce? You ever seen a live performance? Join the wanker club.
What Are Ya made number 36 in the Hottest 100 of 1998. It had a bit of swearing that probably kept it off the top end of the commercial charts, but it ended up at number 66 anyway. The film clip saw TISM take part in an aerobics TV show, but then they become yobs over the course of the clip. They start having beers, smokes, playing footy, and then they start attacking the aerobics instructors. That album, www.tism.wanker.com, is great. Despite the swearing, it's one of Tism's most likeable albums. The guitars are thick, the beats are fun. There was a bonus disc that looked like a recordable CD with Texter writing on it saying, faulty and should be returned to the factory. And apparently lots of people did. It's just another Tismism for no reason. After two albums in the national spotlight, I think some of the novelty wore off. And the irony and humour that marked the second half of the 90s with bands like Regurgitator, Custard and the Foves gave way to something new with bands like The Vines and Jet and a new earnestness. It wasn't necessarily bad, it was just different, and it was music for new teenagers, not people who were teenagers in 1995. The follow-up to www.tism.wanker.com came 3 years later. It was 2001's De Rigor Mortis. The lead single was called Honk If You Like Fred Durst. River Phoenix and Humphrey B. Bear and Jeff Kennett were all sacred cows and punching up. I would say Fred Durst was already a joke by 2001, as was Britney Spears, the subject of another song, who was another easy target. But maybe that wasn't Tism's fault. The world had just changed. Tism taught us all to be cynical about celebrities. And now that we all were cynical about celebrities, what were Tism going to target next? Here's Honk If You Love Fred Durst by Tism. The album charted at number 24 on the back of fan support. Also, for some reason, they had signed a new deal with Festival Mushroom, moving their entire back catalogue over as well. I don't know if it was a big, expensive record deal or if Festival just reckoned their fan base meant it made some sense mathematically. Although Tism would really slow down after that, they released a best of in 2002 called Best Off, with two Fs at the end. It featured a new track called the Philip Ruddock Blues. Philip Ruddock was the right-wing minister for immigration and the person behind the idea that Australia should just stop taking asylum seekers, contravening international human rights law. He was the face of many unjust deaths in Australia, or, you know, just offshore from Australia. His work was called The Pacific Solution, and the people behind it were blind to how close it sounded to another political solution that involved displaced people. What a... Here's Philip Ruddock Blues by Tism.
Expose the market forces.
Everybody help yourself.
Your love of country may not fit.
Everybody help yourself.
In with efficiency.
Everybody help yourself.
Costs exceed in benefits.
Everybody help yourself.
At Gallipoli.
Everybody help yourself.
Self-sacrifice just cannot pass.
Everybody help yourself.
A profit loss assessment.
Everybody help yourself.
Those Anzac slaughtered on
yourself.
Returns for investment.
Everybody help yourself.
A government will only...
One more album of sorts followed in 2004. It was called The White Albin, Albin with an N. And the album cover was all white. The album cover and the title was a joke on how bands appropriate the Beatles, so why not Tism? It was part of a DVD and CD set that featured a documentary about the band and a live concert. But because it was more of a DVD, it wasn't eligible to chart. There was one unexpected turn for this album. The opening track, Everyone Else Has Had More Sex Than Me, had a competition for someone to make a film clip. An Australian animator, Bernard Derriman, submitted a clip, which featured cute rabbits with numbers on them showing how many times they had sex. The video became a bit of a viral hit. It won some animation awards. It led to Sony in Germany releasing the song, and it charted at number 63 in the German charts, and is Tism's most successful song globally. You know how bands like Chumbawamba had a massive hit, and some music nerd will say, well, actually, they made a lot of albums before that that people liked. Well, someone is currently saying that about Tism, and in German. Derriman went on to be a successful animator and co-directed the Bob's Burgers movie. Amazing, right? Here's Everyone Else Has Had More Sex Than Me, Tism's most successful song, almost by accident.
Everyone else has had more sex than me. Ooh. Everyone else has had more sex than me.
It must have been at a festival like the Big Day Out, or maybe it was a festival where Tism didn't play at all. But I had a lovely interaction when my friends met a bunch of other young people at a festival, and we were all talking and somehow Tism came up. This was like 99 or 2000, I'd say. One young woman who I had just met said she had a theory about Tism. She said, I reckon they're all teachers. Why was that? Because she was from Melbourne, she was studying to be a teacher, and all of Tism's gigs coincided with Victorian school holidays. That young woman, whose name I never learnt and who I never met again, was spot on. Ron Hitler Barassi turned out to be a teacher. I wish I could go back in time and high-five that young woman. I think the fact that these guys had day jobs was important. They didn't do 250 shows a year, and it made their appearances special. It also meant that they avoided the classic pitfall of bands who ended up writing about nothing but how it feels to be in a band. At the height of their fame, they were going to perform on commercial rock radio Triple M, but one member of the band actually worked at Triple M, and no one knew. That person had to make an excuse to his boss, go around the corner, put on his balaclava and outfit, do the interview, and then go back to work. After Tism broke up, Ron, or Peter Minnach, went back to his day job. Most of Tism did. Only Damien Cowell pursued a consistent music career post-Tism. Unmasked, he created the country band Root, and then the DC3, and then the Damien Cowell Disco Machine. He also did an excellent podcast about his own life. He also released a song called I Was the Guy in Tism in 2010. Here's the DC3 with I Was the Guy in Tism.
Push button. Push button.
I was the guy in Tism. No, really. I was the guy in Tism. No, really. I wrote the bits you like, but not the bits you hate. I wrote the bits you like, but not the bits you hate. I was the guy in Tism.
Push button.
I was the guy in Tism. There, I said it. That place in Flinders Lane won't look at me like I'm there to collect my daughter? Does that mean I won't be sneered at in groovy record stores? Does that mean people will forgive me for being a self-centered bore? Does that mean my hitherto plain features will become strangely compelling? Does that mean I'll get an invite to the Hall of Fame dinner? so I can disgust some ex-idol.
The music industry craves familiarity. Radio stations want to please you, so you keep them on all day and you listen to their ads. Record companies want to make it easy for you to open your wallets, and the concert industry wants you to have a great night out. So it's incredible that a band like TISM, one of the most subversive and anarchic bands to ever exist in the world, let alone Australia, could thrive. Apart from being a unique and memorable band, they existed because the culture was ready for them. If anything, they got there a bit early. Those early pranks on journalists before they got famous, I often wish that someone had a camera phone. They were a band whose visuals were important. But perhaps so was the myth. Camera phones might have given us the truth. And I don't want truth, I want TISM. Their success in the second half of the 90s was helped by Triple J, but also the important rise of Recovery and Channel V, as well as the Big Day Out. You had to see the whole act, it wasn't just about the songs. I think a lot of people appreciated TISM's game. That early Hey Hey It's Saturday performance aside, I know a lot of people who worked at radio or TV, and they were always excited when TISM was coming in. Four skinny white dudes with guitars came in every day. A TISM visit was something memorable. You would tell your loved ones about it later on. And isn't that what art is about? It has to be incredibly hard to keep TISM going. Everything you do is a reinvention. Every single or album cover have to have layers of meaning and jokes. Every song had to have a purpose. Who is sewing all these costumes? Who is planning all these pranks? So much of the music is great. Not only did they come up with so many great album covers, song ideas, and colourful costumes, just look at the hooks. In terms of being able to write radio hooks, something people get paid millions to do in America, TISM were one of the best. They care about their recordings. They love to write big fun songs with lots of interesting detail that people could sing along to. I love that they play with samples, and they still have great guitarists. Just occasionally their songs were about Hitler being shat on. They challenged people in every other way, but their music was damn likeable. As you do with something like Monty Python or The Simpsons, you fall in love with it at first because it's funny and weird. It was only years later that I really understood the precision of their subversion. They had so much to say about Australian culture, celebrity culture, pretentiousness, and anti-intellectualism. And whether you agreed with what they were challenging, it's good to have music and art that wants to challenge you. This was very much in keeping with being alternative, whatever the hell that means. You didn't often hear about Carl Jung on the radio. I always think of AFL legend James Hird when I come across James Joyce. They were also undoubtedly smart whilst doing it. They never dumbed themselves down, and they made their audience meet them at their level. And speaking of audience, there is something special about TISM fans. They have one of the most dedicated fan bases I've ever come across. And I think it's because they have never compromised, so the people that are inclined to love them have plenty to love. TISM fans feed off lots of live albums, demo compilations, and bootlegs. TISM, who has rallied against conformity so often, has a loving, supportive fan base. In 2022, that devoted fan base was greeted with the news they waited years for, which was TISM were reuniting. They had been treated to years of reissues, and the fan base was still there. After 18 years away, they returned to headline the festival Good Things. They were also set to release a new album that is not out at the time of this recording. It's called Death to Art. Looking at the announced track listing, my favourite TISMism is one of the songs is called Mind Bandcamp. Here's TISM with Death to Art. If you want a place to start with TISM, there is a compilation called Collected Verses, which came out in 2022. It features all those big singles on a double album. He'll Never Be an Old Man River, Greg the Stop Sign, What Are Ya, along with those early singles which are not as popular, but just as fun. The two big commercial albums, Machiavelli and the Four Seasons and www.tism.wanker.com, were hits for a reason. It's their most likeable albums. Australian music writer and friend of the show Tyler Jenke has announced a 33 and a third book about Machiavelli and the Four Seasons, which will come out in mid-2025. The first of hopefully many books about TISM to come. I still don't know how to explain TISM. There are so many more TISM stories. I don't know what's true or myth. I'm not even sure it matters. Maybe one day someone will make a horrible biopic that just smooths the story down to one about fame and friendship. Maybe they were just a band after all, and who gives a shit? Maybe trying to work it all out just isn't the point. I'm going to end with one of my favourite TISM songs. It was the last single from www.tism.wanker.com called Thunderbirds Are Coming Out. The wonderful film clip is one shot of dozens of bands playing along to the song. As a snapshot of what bands looked like in the 90s, there is nothing better. As a song, it's typical that it's fun, and it meant one thing on the surface and something else underneath that. Here's Thunderbirds Are Coming Out by TISM. Thanks for listening to this episode and welcome to the end bit. This is where I talk about the different ways to support the podcast. There's various costs and so much time involved in making the podcast, and being able to devote some real time to it is only something I can do with your support. One of the easiest ways is a tipping service called Buy Me a Coffee. It's just a way for you to leave me a tip. No subscriptions or anything. And I absolutely drink those coffees. Lots of people have bought me coffees and that's unbelievable. So thank you, and links to Buy Me a Coffee is in the description. And Buy Me a Coffee is just one of a couple of ways that you can support me. There's the Patreon, of course, and there's the new book, the Just Ace book, which is adapted from the first two seasons of the podcast so far. You can also buy other merchandise and t-shirts and tote bags. There's also important no-cost ways to support me as well, like leaving me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, leaving me a 5-star review on Amazon if you buy a book, and you can share the podcast on your socials, or simply tell a friend. I appreciate your time as well. All the links that you need are in the description. There's also links to the website and socials where you can find out more, and there's music playlists and notes from every episode. And that's it. Next week, the fight to make something authentic reaches our TVs.
Hi, this is Ben.
And this is Sam.
We've got a podcast called Oz Rock Rated.
We take our favourite Australian bands' catalogues
and we rank them worst to best, according to us.
So if you're a fan of Oz Rock,
join us wherever you get your podcasts.